where I'm from and a little bit further south, they do these bizarre reenactments. Are they reenacting shooting Custer? Because I'm there for that.
That would be fascinating. I would love that.
Because you know how we love a Civil War reenactment. Yeah, let's see that.
Yeah.
Let's see that reenacted over and over and over again. Put it on a loop. Hell, put it on the moon. Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
All right. So
welcome to this holiday.
Yeah, we're celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day.
Indigenous Peoples Day is something that the country is turning towards.
Yeah.
As hey, maybe we should rethink Columbus Day.
Yeah. And as I was just saying before we started, you wouldn't have heard that part, but I've been seeing it more and more on calendars. I think it's on when I download my calendar for my phone, it's on there, Indigenous Peoples Day. And I saw it in some calendars that I've purchased. So it is catching on all over the place. And we're going to, we're going to celebrate it in a different way. So what do you have?
So we grew up, so it used to be called Columbus Day. Well, it still is called
some
Columbus
call it
Day.
Columbus Day. I always thought it was fishy.
Yeah, so Christopher Columbus, as we were taught in the history books.
1492, he came over here with syphilis or whatever, and disease, and the ocean blue.
Right, and he was bankrolled by the queen
to
discover or to go and conquer or whatever.
Yeah.
So he came over here and was like, hey, this land is now ours, but it was already inhabited.
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
But he was like, well, they're different colors, so it doesn't really count, right?
And also, it doesn't seem like they have any paperwork.
Yeah. And they don't have big armies.
Yeah, so let's just do this.
And they don't have guns, so guess what? We're going to.
In the name of the queen.
Yeah. So that's what happened. But we really should remember all the people that were killed and whose land it really was in the first place. However, the move to change the name from Columbus Day into Indigenous Peoples Day is now getting criticism from people who think it's anti-immigrant and anti-Catholic.
Anti-Catholic? How is it anti-Catholic?
Because he was Catholic.
So?
A lot of Italians are Catholic.
Okay, but a lot of people who aren't Italian are Catholic, and a lot of people who are Catholic are not Italian.
Yeah.
I would never think of it as an anti-Catholic. There are a lot of anti-Catholic things in this country.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of anti-Catholic legislation and movements, but I don't think this is one of them. If it is, it's a very poor one. Because I don't see how this is going to root out Catholicism.
I know.
It's not effective.
So instead of celebrating enslavement and the deaths of the people.
Millions of people,
And
the confiscation of their lands.
Yeah, there are other ways to celebrate and honor the people who actually died.
Yeah.
And actually and a lot of people who then built the country and died.
And a lot of those cultures have survived.
Yeah.
Which is interesting too. I always remember when I'm talking to my students about Native American cultures, these are living cultures. Right there, we still have Native Americans among, especially in New York City, there are a lot of Native Americans. So it's not really a good thing to think about these cultures as if they're in the past. A lot of them are still here and they're vibrant, and they're becoming more vibrant as the years pass on, which is cool. And we should know something about them.
Right. So Native Americans, a lot of people are familiar with Crazy Horse and Geronimo and Rain in the Face, but they don't know Buffalo Calf Road.
Who's Buffalo Calf
Road? She's a woman, Cheyenne woman. And she fought multiple battles against both white settlers and rival tribes.
Wow.
Yes.
I've never heard of this woman.
Yeah, I know. And there was one battle commonly referred to as the Battle of Rosebud in 1876.
That's awesome.
Yes. Upon seeing her brother, named Chief Comes in Sight.
Okay.
falls as his horse was shot from underneath him. And Buffalo Calf Road charged right into the middle of the fray to save him. And her bravery led to the Cheyenne to name that battle as the battle where the girl saves her brother.
That's nice.
So it's called the Battle of Rosebud, but it's really
the Battle of Buffalo Calf Road.
Where the girl saves her brother. That's the name of the battle, really.
Now that's something to celebrate.
Yeah, so she has another claim to fame where she fired the arrow that knocked Custer himself right off his horse at the end of the Battle of the Greasy Grass.
Really?
Otherwise known as Custer's Last Stand.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's Custer's Last Stand, but they take out the other side of it.
Yeah.
Is the woman who shot
the woman
Custer.
Who did it. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
But I really like the other side naming the battles.
Yeah. Because
it's their history. That's the way it is. Yeah. So that's one thing, too. But if the people who are complaining about honoring the Italian heritage...
So many cool ways to honor Italian heritage.
Right. There are so many different ways. I mean,
Feast of San Gennaro.
Right. Oh, that's great. Yeah, go and get some food.
Yeah. Any number of things.
There's another woman that you should be familiar with. Her name is Irma Marchiani.
Okay.
And she was a female fighter in the Italian resistance.
Mm-hmm.
The bands of Italians fighting against both occupying German forces and Italian fascist puppet regimes during World War II.
Okay.
So she's the granddaughter of a decorated soldier who served under one of the fathers of Italy. And she was eventually captured and tried and sentenced to death. At her execution, she walked out in front of the firing squad with her handkerchief over her heart, pointing at it, she spoke her last words, "Shoot well, shoot here."
Wow. I like her style.
Yeah.
Isn't
that cool?
Yeah.
She did that?
Going with dignity.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, that's cool.
Yeah. So what you got?
All right, so I was thinking about colonization, and of course, me being who I am, I thought about, you know, what about the moon?
What about... I know.
What about the moon?
No kidding, because we continue to trip over ourselves, mm-hmm. fighting everybody and killing each other here.
Trying to colonize the moon. So I found this information here. It says there's a woman, a professor of astronomy and geology at Mount Holyoke College. Her name is Darby Dyer, which is a cool name.
Okay.
Darby Dyer. Says the moon is to people today what the New World was to Europeans 600 years ago. So this sounds like we're going to steal it and then trash it, which I don't like. But in any case, she's serving on something called the Solar System Exploration Research Virtual Institute. And the virtual part is because they don't physically get together, but they meet online and whatnot. And there are 9 teams around the country, and they're trying to figure out how future residents of the moon can get at a chemical compound that is essential to human existence on the moon. So basically what they're saying is, if there's no water up there, we're not going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm,
so they're trying to figure out a way to either get water to the moon or extract water to the moon in a way that's sustainable. So the first thing they're trying to do is find out where the water is and how to tap it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying there's water, or the ability for us to get water on the moon. She said some water was formed at the same time the moon was formed. And she said it is, quote-unquote, locked in its minerals in tiny amounts. It's a concept that's hard to understand for people who are used to freely flowing water. So there's water there, but it's just, I guess, sparse and difficult to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And they said water would also come from comets that have crashed on the moon. These comets are made of ice, and the heat of the impact melted the ice, and some of the water might be preserved in permanently shadowed craters where the sun cannot reach it. But another way we could get water there is from a solar wind. So they're trying to just basically figure out, if we're going to be colonizing the moon, we have to figure out a way to get water. Mm-hmm. And then they ask, who owns the moon? It's still up for grabs. So I decided to do a little research on there. It's not up for grabs. According to NASA, the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, the exploration and use of outer space should be carried on for the benefit of all peoples, irrespective of their degree of economic or scientific development, and that all exploration and use of outer space is for peaceful purposes only.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So over there, like 100+ nations signed this treaty that said that nobody owns the moon.
Okay, and hands off.
Hands off the moon, and everything up there has to be peaceful. So this means you cannot... it says you cannot place in orbit anything carrying nuclear weapons or any weapons of mass destruction. You may not install a weapon on any celestial body, so you cannot arm the moon and start pointing it at people. It says outer space, including the moon and other celestial bodies, is not subject to national appropriation. by claim of sovereignty, by means of use or occupation, or by any other means. And this is in accordance with international law. So it's a really long document, but basically it says if you put anything out there, it has to be peaceful.
Okay.
But if we put, say Heike has its own satellite.
No, which we're not saying we don't have.
We're not saying we don't, but let's say Heike and Elon Musk, for example, come together as a super group and put something in outer space, and it falls back down to Earth, no matter where it lands.
Uh-huh.
Even if it lands in some other podcast or studio, they have to give it back to us.
Nice.
So there are all these rules that govern outer space. But the question is like, are nations going to actually follow these rules?
And
when
we all
do
know.
Europeans follow treaties?
And when and since when does Donald Trump follow anybody's rules?
Yes. Are all
or
of these,
his own.
Are
or
any
anything.
Of these leaders going to actually, adhere to this outer space treaty of 1967? I hope they are. So we can... It doesn't say that you can't colonize the moon, but it's just saying that anyone can go there and do whatever it is that they want as long as it's for peaceful purposes and you share.
I'm going to start a new treaty with that's going to be, I guess it's like going to be my dictatorship in a way.
But then you can't have a treaty. You're just playing out like a
I'm
going to
put it at, nobody get on, everybody stay off the moon.
That's it?
That's it.
Everybody
out? Off the
How
moon.
Are you going to stop it? You're going to put a gun up there and be like, if you come anywhere near this moon,
that's right.
I will blast you out of the skies.
Moon bodyguards. That's what I'm going to shoot up into space.
Yes.
Yeah, Elon Musk. You shot that convertible up into space with an astronaut. I'm mm-hmm. going to shoot up
We're going to put some rent-a-cops in that car.
I'm going to put some muscle up there.
Mall cops.
Yeah.
To stop people from getting onto
Constantly
the moon.
Constantly orbiting around the moon like no way, Jose.
How about we need a dog? Some kind of space dog? That will stop people from getting onto the moon and
right.
weaponizing it.
Or some bouncers at a high-end club.
Yes.
You can't get in here. You're not properly dressed.
Twins of some kind.
Yes.
With flat tops. Can style. You're not on the list.
Yeah.
Is that a nuclear weapon? You're not getting in.
I'm kidding.
I'm sorry. Yeah, and so the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, and they're really working on this colonizing of the moon.
But they all know that if you mess with the moon, you're messing with the life on Earth.
Yeah, I don't think they're concerned about that. I think they want to use the moon as... I think the idea around colonizing the moon is that it'll be used as a space station to get to the next... To get to Mars.
Well, they're going to have to find another little rock out there
That's
somewhere.
That's going to be hard.
Well, well, fine. Put your scientist minds to work
and
find out an alternative. It's too precious and it's just... We have to have it working properly in order to live.
I was just about to suggest, why don't we make our own planet? But I think I've already seen the Death Star. And I saw how that turned out. So I'm going to have to put a hard no on that one.
Right.
So yeah, colonization of the moon. Look, all I'd say is look at the way that we colonize things here. I think until we figure out a different way to run a colony, maybe we should just leave the moon be.
Yeah, until we become a little more enlightened and have some impulse control.
I mean, I also am a little worried, too, maybe I've seen too many science fiction movies, that I think that they're... Hopefully the moon doesn't have a way to protect itself, I'll put it that way.
Wait a minute, do you think that the moon...
Like microbes or something, you know, the way that our natural environment... Mm-hmm. Protects or the way that your body protects itself with like antibodies or something like that. I hope there's not some kind of, you know, little teeny tiny moon type microbe that's like, I don't think so.
I'm sure that there's got to be something.
There's got to be something. If there's water there's other things there as well.
Well, I also think that space is going to does a number on people too.
You think we're going to get spat out the side? We're all going to be looking down and be like, wasn't that our planet?
I keep saying, look at that astronaut, the twin who went up there. Was it John Kelly? Whatever. I keep calling him John Kelly.
Look,
I think that's
his name. Identical legs. He's no longer a twin.
So the thing is, he's an astronaut and he's a twin. And his twin stayed on Earth. He went into space for quite some time, came back. His DNA was altered. He is no longer a twin.
And he listened to country.
He did listen to country music.
Before he listened to rock and roll.
But he has a... He has a variety of health problems that are like nobody saw coming as a result of being in space
now,
that long.
Was he in the International Space Station?
I don't know.
You just know he was in space.
I just know he was in space. And that he is a hot mess now.
And that's the technical term. He has hot moon madness.
So I feel like outer space is going to protect the moon in a way.
It's going to take care of its own.
Yeah. It's just going to be like wadding us up into paper balls.
Okay.
The equivalent of a paper ball.
The equivalent of it.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. So what do you have?
I have.
Leave the moon alone.
Leave the moon alone is my mantra.
I got the four R's.
Four R's. Rehearse, record, rinse, and repeat.
209 West 40th Street. Hashtag #BunkLifeNYC.
Okay, so if you really, say you're off on the day that was known as Columbus Day.
Mm-hmm. The day formerly known as.
Yes. So what do you do? There's 10 different ways to celebrate all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to go through all 10. I'm sure you can.
I usually take that day to, like, catch up on things,
yeah.
Like any other holiday in America.
Yeah.
Right? I don't really do much celebration. It's like, look over some bills and correspondence.
Right.
Maybe
yeah.
clean my closet.
Really, exactly. Mm-hmm. In Colorado, in Boulder, you can have a teach-in and friendship dance.
Oh, cool.
They have that at the White Horse Creek Council in
okay.
Denver. It's hosting a mini powwow teach-in and friendship dance. It will include traditional dances performed by the award-winning Plenty Wolf Singers.
Okay.
Yes.
I wonder if there's some other middling groups that are like, damn it, we're pretty good.
But we're no Plenty Wolf.
Oh, yeah, we're no Plenty Wolf. What do you think you are, Plenty Wolf? Get off stage.
I know Plenty Wolf.
Yeah.
Visitors also get a chance to learn a circle and friendship band and take in an oral retelling of Boulder's history.
Nice. That sounds cool.
So other cities are doing, dedicating the day to honor their Native American culture. Seattle sets the whole week aside.
Oh,
for
wow.
that too,
and they have a large Native American population.
Yeah,
most known for their art. Their totem poles are very distinctive looking.
Yeah,
and the Pacific Northwest.
Let's see. There is the Crazy Horse Memorial
okay.
in South Dakota.
I've seen.
It's huge, right?
Yes,
it's massive.
It's bizarre.
Well, that's what my aunt was saying. Something she's like, you've never seen anything like
it's
this
strange.
In your life. It's so big. Go ahead and look it up, listeners, if you haven't seen it. It's Crazy Horse on his horse. But it's huge.
It's huge. I wonder how Native Americans feel about that. Because it's definitely the way that we commemorate people in the modern, you know, Western sense. But is that something that they would have done? You know what I mean?
I know.
If you've ever seen, like, Mount Rushmore, it's like, what the F? It's just a bizarre way to commemorate
somebody. But South Dakota has celebrated Native American Day since 1990.
Okay.
So they're one of
the first ones.
It's not only the first state.
Probably also
the first state.
There's no one there.
The first state not to observe Columbus Day
okay.
statewide.
That's right.
And then it was Vermont.
Okay. Of course.
In 2017.
Wow.
So that's a...
They're at the vanguard of
yeah.
this kind of stuff, yeah.
So the first celebration of the holiday was held at the Crazy Horse Memorial in the Black Hills,
mm-hmm.
The monument to the Lakota leader who defended General George Custer.
Mm-hmm. Who sucks.
At the Battle of Little Bighorn.
And I'm sure there's some
but
people somewhere
know.
Who are like, Custer was amazing. It's
but,
like, no, he was a terrible person, and he lost.
And also a woman shot his horse.
Yep, a woman shot his horse.
So, huh.
So deal with that.
So the memorial still hosts an annual celebration with performances from Native American dancers, singers, artists, and storytellers.
Now, do they do, because where I'm from and a little bit further south, they do these bizarre reenactments. Are they reenacting Shooting Custer? Because I'm there for that.
Oh, that would be fascinating. I would love that.
Because you know how we love a Civil War reenactment.
Yeah,
let's
right.
see that.
Yeah.
Let's see that reenacted over and over and over again. Put it on loop. Hell, put it on the moon.
But I do know this. If you go there, you get a free buffalo stew lunch.
Huh. Have you had buffalo before?
No.
I heard it's really good and good for you.
Mm.
I stopped eating meat before I had access to buffalo.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be like the ultimate meat.
Yeah.
That's the slogan.
In very L.A., and they celebrate Indigenous People Day.
Mm-hmm.
They did it for the first time in 2017.
Okay.
But organizations in the city have been observing it before the official designation. So it's been going
on.
Yeah,
you don't have to
wait
for the state to recognize it, do you think?
Right. So in the Los Angeles Basin area, they hold the annual Life Before Columbus Festival.
Okay. Wow. I like that.
And it features traditional singers and dancers, Native American foods, workshops and exhibitions on crafting items like reed baskets, and traditional Native toys.
Oh, that's cool. I'd like to learn some traditional Native American crafts. I just like crafts in general.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I love craft stuff. I think it's fascinating, like, people with craft and folk art. And usually because, like you said, like, making baskets, it's also useful.
Yeah.
So you're making something beautiful, but it has a purpose because you're not, you know, you're not just making something for ornamentation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And then here in...
Not the dolls, though.
No, we're not making a doll.
Not making dolls from any culture, sorry.
Yeah.
Not making an exception here, either.
God.
No dolls.
Scariest. You know what I found in my mother's house?
A corn husk doll? Have you ever seen one of those? It's frightening.
No, I found an angel, but it was made out of twigs.
No.
And it looked like...
The Blair Witch.
Blair Witch. It was the Blair Witch angel, and I threw it away.
Who made it?
I don't know, but my brother and
How did you throw it away?
Oh, God.
I love how your brother's always involved with something that has to be thrown away. It's like the two of you are like, what do we do?
We have to throw it away. But here's the thing. We were throwing away stuff, cleaning out the house, and he threw it away.
And I
walked down the hallway into one of the bedrooms, and then he came up and he was like, what is this rose doing here? I'm like, what are you talking about? And there was like a plastic rose that was in the center of the hallway. We have no idea where it came from. It was just there. Obviously, we dropped it, you know, like carrying out. We don't recall seeing any plastic flowers in our hall. It just was there in the middle of the hallway.
I don't like that.
I don't like it either. We both were creeped out.
An angel made of twigs?
There was an angel made of twigs. We threw it out and a rose appeared.
I would have burnt it. Both of them down. I would have melted the rose down, burnt the twig down. That's awful. I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yes.
Right. And this is why you should leave the moon alone.
That's right. Leave the moon alone.
That's how I'm going to end every anecdote now. And that's why you don't mess with the moon.
All right. If you are here in New York City and you want to celebrate Indigenous People Day, try Randall's Island.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that existed. I
haven't been out there yet. Apparently they have all kinds of things going on there. I know some people who went last year and they said it was a blast.
Yeah, it's a free celebration thrown by the Red Hawk Native American Arts Council.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 2-day event including an overnight campout, a sunrise ceremony. You know I love a ceremony.
Yeah. It's family friendly too, I heard.
Spoken word performance.
Mm-hmm.
Guest talks from activists and cultural groups, and more. And it's dedicated to honoring water protectors.
We need that.
We need that. And I'd like to add, maybe they'll do something about the moon.
Yeah. Yes. I would hope so. It's really disconcerting. I mean, the protection of water is a serious thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like when people put it down, it's like, what are they doing? It's like, well, they want us to have fresh water.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other ulterior motive other than making sure that we all have clean water.
If you don't have water in 2 or 3 days, you're gone.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you're done.
Yeah, it's something we should all be concerned about. We shouldn't leave it to them. It's not like they're the only ones that have the water.
Yeah. In St. Paul, Minnesota... the Electric Machete Studios, it's an art gallery, there's a concert, formerly called the Anti-Columbus Day Concert.
Mm-hmm.
They use hip-hop and community action to raise awareness around the effects of colonization and on communities of color and celebrate Indigenous culture through art and music.
Cool.
That's cool.
I can see how some Italians might be a little upset about that if you're calling it Anti-Columbus Day, but that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because celebrating Columbus Day is a little, it's like anti-Native American, though.
Yeah, because that's when you celebrate Columbus,
yeah,
and
what
he did, he killed a ton of Native Americans and took their land.
Yeah, so that's what you saw. If you want to celebrate that, that's fine,
mm-hmm.
as long as you acknowledge that that's what that is.
It's not like this was empty land with just scattered, like, little bits of people, and they,
It's also not like he
And you moved in.
But it's also not like he came here and opened up a pizza parlor in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, these things didn't happen.
Yeah. It was just a brutal
As a black kid growing up, I was always like, I'm going to go ahead and stay quiet during this Columbus Day celebration and just let this wash
You know, over. And as a white person, we didn't, like, as a kid, you don't realize what it is.
Well, it seems okay.
And you're told, right? He sailed over and built America.
And there was nothing here.
He discovered it.
Yeah.
And it was just empty. All this beautiful.
It's such a small piece of land.
It was totally empty.
I don't know how no one else saw it. Other people just sailed right by it.
Actually, there were a few people here, but then they showed him and helped him.
As I always have to bring up, there's a book called 1491, I think, or something like that, when the Chinese were here. They came, and we're like, eh.
Yeah.
and went back home.
They effed off.
And yeah, they did some trading, and they're like, eh.
Okay.
We'll come back later. So I found a really bizarre thing here. I'm not much of a... I don't know that much about African-American history. I'm not an expert by any estimation. But this was something that I had heard about. It's called the American Colonization Society. So you may know about this. Mm-hmm. It was formed in 1817 to send free African-Americans to Africa as an alternative to emancipation.
What?
So the idea was, instead of freeing these people, instead of...
And wait, when, what year is this?
This is 1817.
Okay.
So instead of emancipation, send them back.
Oh,
let's send them back. In 1822, the society established on the west coast of Africa a colony that in 1847 became the independent nation of Liberia.
No.
So I knew a little bit about Liberia and Monrovia, but these are parts of American history that, like, nobody knows. Even, I mean, slavery, yes, it's shameful, but this is even, like, just deal with what you've done.
Yeah, just
be like, send them back. Like, we're done. Like, it's a used car part. By 1867, the society had sent more than 13,000 African Americans to Africa. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, this area that later became known as Liberia, this is not where people were from necessarily originally. So you're just sending them back to, like, Africa.
Yeah.
So they apparently got the land, which they stole the land in Africa. It belonged to somebody else. I think the British were involved at some point. They got this land. They're like, we'll send all these free, instead of freeing people, just get them out of here. We don't need them anymore. Send them back. It was dissolved in 1964, the society. And then the records were donated to the Library of Congress.
Okay.
So it started, this guy named Paul Cuffey, who was a Quaker ship owner of African-American and Native American ancestry. He advocated selling freed American slaves in Africa. He gained support from the British government and free black leaders in the United States. So at the time, a lot of people were like, maybe this isn't such a bad idea. It's not working for us here. We don't know if we're necessarily going to be freed or not. When we do get free, what are we going to do? How are we going to be treated? Maybe we should consider heading back. So they worked with the British government, free black leaders in the U.S., and then members of Congress. They made a plan to take people to the British colony of Sierra Leone. And where they set up a place called Freetown. So a lot of people were okay with there was a lot of pro-colonization arguments. And then he laid the groundwork for the ACS, the American Colonization Society. Bizarre. The whole thing is really bizarre.
That is, the idea...
That you can just send... So you've stolen people from their land.
Mm-hmm.
You've used them. Right? You've destroyed their culture, their spirits, everything. Now you're finished.
Because you can't do it anymore.
And instead of making it right,
yeah,
you know, they send them back. Oh, and, of course, when they sent them back, they acted as tyrants. So the freed African-Americans who went back to Africa then became a colonial class and terrorized the people that were there. Of course.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's like I learned it from watching you.
Yeah. No kidding. And if you grow up that way, that's the only thing you know.
Yeah. So there wasn't a lot of public support for this thing. They tried to raise money. It was a thing that, like, preachers would, you know, they were, of course, down with it because religion is everywhere. This is a really good idea. So they tried to raise money by selling lifetime memberships. And, of course, a lot of the money was mishandled, et cetera, et cetera. But it was pretty interesting because they were envisioning, not only were they, so they were sending African-American, freed African-Americans back, but there, it seemed like the underlying idea is that this would be America colonizing Africa. Instead of just getting Africans and bringing them over here, it was like, we'll send our Africans back to set up colonies and to start the American colonization. And then, of course, because they gave them guns and training and that kind of stuff, so Liberia became very powerful and they tried to exert themselves over other groups of Africans that were there.
Really? Yeah. I remember watching some kind of documentary on Liberia, and they were saying, Liberians love America.
Well, it is America in a way. Like, it's like the long arm of colonization. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, very sad. I don't know. I just thought I'd bring that up.
Yeah.
The ACS. There's a lot of information on it. And it's interesting because if you go to the website, this is through Library of Congress. So, a lot of these documents, everything is there since 1964. And it's available to the public. Uh-huh. And they literally are saying, like, if you want to come and do research on this at Library of Congress, please do.
Really?
Yeah. These documents are here. Because at this point, you know, the people who would have been involved in this or implicated in whatever rights are wrong, everyone's gone. But the information is in the Library of Congress, and there on the site, it's like, if you want to do some research on this, come do some research on it. So I'm thinking about looking into it because I find it fascinating.
It is fascinating.
It's something I had heard about, but it's like, this is, you know, colonization, it just never ends. Right.
Yeah, and I hear more and more on social media, and I know this must have been going on for a while, but people calling other people colonizers and the colonizer mentality. And it's instead of just saying, you know, white people are like this or, you know, this person is like that, calling it a colonizer. It's like, I really like that because it's just
mentality and it can be a way, it's a mentality I think that anyone can adopt. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that if, like, you know, even though I'm African-American, I'm American. And I don't know if I were to go to certain places, if my mindset would be, you know, that of a colonial kind of mindset, mm-hmm. if I'm looking at things. I don't know. I hope not.
And do you think it's becoming a thing, I mean, with all the anti-American sentiment, you mm-hmm. know, that people are going to catch on to that and be like, if you came from America, we don't want you? Because even if you are, say, moderate or liberal or whatever, you still have colonizer.
It might be, because how could you not? It would be difficult to not adopt a colonial mindset if you're living in a colonial atmosphere. It's kind of like what we've talked about with the internalized homophobia or internalized sexism. You don't necessarily need the homophobe around.
Right,
it can be inside of you. Like you don't need the you know, the sexist around. You can have internalized those things. So it's possible that we could have internalized colonial mindset, just as these Africans who were sent back immediately, you know, started.
So how can we identify, like, all right, so if you want to talk about internalized, like, sexism or homophobia or something, and what that feels like, you kind of go along with that belief. So if I had internalized sexism, I'm like, I can only do X, Y, and Z because I'm a woman. I'm not worthy of certain things.
Yeah, and
I'm a woman.
To make sure that other women don't get above their station. I don't know.
How would we be acting? How can we catch ourselves so we're not like, hey, I am really have internalized.
Maybe it's a way
of colonizer attitude
of looking at of trying to identify with a culture instead of coming with your own preconceived notions about it. I don't know, but it's something to think about.
Coming with your own preconceived notions and always looking
at... Where do I get those notions from? So, like, if I have an attitude about, say, you know, India, it's like, well, where did I get these ideas about India from? Am I getting it from Indians? Am I getting it from their you know, am I getting it from the British? The way that the British look at Indians? Like, am I getting it from the Indian upper class? As opposed to the, you know, average working class or lower class Indian person. I don't know. I guess, like, really investigating where you're getting your ideas from and thinking about why you adhere to those ideas.
So if you go on vacation somewhere and you see this beautiful, pristine, you know, beachside, you know, area, and you automatically start thinking, like, how can I benefit off this? Yeah. And who can I put to work for me?
Yeah. As opposed to low to no cost. When I see things like that, I'm always like, well, where are the regular people at? Mm-hmm, you know, like, where are the, like, who, why is there no one here? Mm-hmm. Why is this area so pristine? Surely there's another area somewhere else that's less pristine, and what's going on there? Mm-hmm. I guess it's more about, like, who you identify with. Okay. I don't know, but something to consider.
Yeah, sometimes I'd be like, why hasn't anyone built on this yet? Yes. Why haven't they done this? Why haven't they made this into a beautiful, you know, 40-story
resort? Yeah, why is this open land?
Yeah, why is it
you
like know? This?
I guess,
like,
that is a kind of a colonial way. Let's develop.
Yeah, develop it.
You know, and why haven't Makes you done money. It yet?
Get people to work. Yeah, and get you to know work. What? And if they don't have any big costs out there, they don't have to care.
Yeah, sure. Why not just destroy this beautiful landscape and make it a hotel?
Yeah, and put people in, getting people to work for like a low rate, like they do in some other countries.
Yeah, or here.
Yeah.
We also, so in one of my classes, we were thinking about the idea of the Native American schools that were used in the United States to assimilate Native Americans. Mm-hmm. And they had a list of the points of assimilation.
Really?
And one of them was interesting. They toil.
Toil.
So they wanted Native Americans to get used to the idea of toil, which is different from hard work. Because when you think about toil and the connotations of toil, I think about slaves.
Suffering, yeah.
And suffering. And that you're doing this work, but you're not benefiting from the fruits of your labor. Mm-hmm. So they were trying to get Native Americans to accept this idea of just working, and that through that work you would be saved.
Oh, God.
You know, and that you would develop a sense of self-worth. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, the cultures that they were trying to impose this on didn't believe that, mm-hmm. right? They believed in hard work, but hard work for a different, you know, end, mm-hmm. as opposed to just work. And that is a very colonial mindset, because if I were running a colony, mm-hmm. I damn sure would make sure that the people who I was lording over thought that working really hard mm-hmm. would do something for them, their soul. Yeah. Or their future, or just it was a good thing to do. Because I want them to work really hard, and I don't necessarily want to pay them. But I don't want to constantly have to be telling them to work. So if I just make them think that what they're doing, that this toil has some purpose,
yeah.
that I can get away with it.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's insidious.
That is so, and that was one of the bullets that they had. Like,
yeah,
this
that
is
was
what
they
teach.
Had to do, you know. And they used the aspects of Christianity that tie in with that. So, like, idle hands?
Or the devil's
workshop.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
God.
Or it could be just somebody relaxing.
Yeah.
In contemplation.
And, yeah, so always be doing something or else
yeah,
the devil's going to get into you.
But that's great if you're an employer mm-hmm. or an overseer. Mm-hmm. If the people who you're overseeing just automatically think they got to work. Mm-hmm. So, you see how that, so that was used to try to brainwash mm-hmm. Or assimilate Native Americans. But I think that we also have been kind of brainwashed and assimilated by that, mm-hmm. too, when people come here to work. And they're going
to
work really, really, really hard. And
to
even if you're not getting ahead, you still got to work because it's the right thing to do. Whereas what's wrong with just chilling?
Yeah, or just working normal hours.
Yeah, or just working just enough to get the things that you need mm-hmm. and living small, mm-hmm. but more free.
Wow.
Something to think about.
Yeah.
So is that, if that's a colonial mindset and we've internalized it, but we're not the colonists.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Think about all of that. Like, you have to get ahead and you mm-hmm. gotta keep
going. Like, who does that benefit?
Yeah.
Well, it could benefit you, but mostly it benefits your employer.
Yeah.
If you think that you must work hard no matter what, mm-hmm. whether you're compensated
or not,
whether it's recognized. Most of us, especially in the modern era, like the output of our work, we don't even see it sometimes mm-hmm. if you're working in a large organization.
Right. And or if you get these impossible assignments and deadlines to complete them, and it's like,
what for?
You have to.
Yeah.
Or else you're seen as not a team player.
Yeah, but it's the difference between toil and hard work.
Right.
Right? That I thought was interesting. Anyway, so what do you have?
And this has really very little to do with this, but if you're tired of Christopher Columbus,
okay,
and you want to, like, if you want to go ahead and link the name Columbus to something else other than Christopher,
okay,
you can think about the most haunted places in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah.
So this is a Columbus Day.
Yeah, this is if you really want to. Why don't you have like a ghost tour in Columbus, Ohio?
Okay.
And do that instead of...
Is Columbus, Ohio saying this? Because I would if I were them.
This is the thing that I think you should do. So take the day off, go to Columbus, Ohio, and go on this haunted tour.
I love that.
So you can go to the Thurber House.
Okay. Is there anything in relation to James Thurber?
It is a nonprofit literary center, which once served as the home of author and cartoonist James Thurber.
Awesome. That sounds like a fun day.
Yeah. So he himself said that he experienced paranormal activity in the house while he lived there. And today visitors are experiencing phantom footsteps and other activity. Some guests have
What's the other activity?
Get ready. Yeah. Some guests have had books thrown at them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they've...
I don't think I particularly care for that.
And they have seen indistinct figure moving as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a similar
story.
The guy
who flung the book at you?
It's like, read a book.
Yeah.
Get with it.
The literary center. What are you looking at me for?
The Thurber Museum suggesting that the same entities are moving between both buildings because there's two buildings.
Okay.
So it's like the same thing that go back and forth. Yeah. It's got a lot of work to do. A lot of books to throw.
Yeah.
The general consensus is that the source of the hauntings is that several people died in a fire in an institution that once stood close.
Oh, wow. And they got over to Thurber House?
Yeah.
It's like a repository, not only for books, but also for spirits.
I'm check it out, read this. Yes. All right. The old governor's mansion, they describe seeing an African-American woman wearing a blue dress from the 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
She's been seen in many different rooms throughout the house. And And during the renovation of the house, she actually appeared to the workers and spoke directly to them.
Uh-huh. What'd she say?
She wanted to tell them how happy she was about the remodeling work they were planning.
I wonder who this person is.
She also said she is responsible for moving paintings around inside the mansion during the night.
Yeah, she's just trying to show you how it's done.
Yeah, she's like, I like this. She likes the renovation.
Why did you guys put that over there? Portrait goes here.
And then there's Mirror Lake. One of the most haunted locations in Columbus, Ohio.
I didn't know that Columbus, Ohio had a lot of haunted sites. Okay. Yeah.
And it's near Ohio State University, and there's a couple of different ghosts that are linked to the location, including a student of the university who drowned in the lake during the 60s.
Wow.
And the visitors say at the lake they hear frantic splashing and even muffled screams as if the drowning was played over and over. One of these residual hauntings.
Ah, the loop.
Yes. The other spirit is said to be of a jogger who was killed close to the lake. He is often said to create a cool rush of air as he runs past the visitors. Maybe that's the wind.
Yes, that could be. I heard Columbus gets drafty.
Yeah, and they say they see his apparition, and they say that he looks over his shoulder as he runs. Like,
is that how he died?
Back. Maybe.
He tripped.
Well, here's one for us to go to. The Red Brick Tavern.
Okay.
It was built in 1836. And since then, it served a variety of purposes over the years, including a tavern, an inn, a school, and even a private residence.
Mm-hmm. When was it a school? After it was a bar?
I know, right?
You know?
And when it was a restaurant, its signature dish was named after the president, John Quincy.
It was revenge served cold.
Yeah, right. It is said that there's a female ghost in the upstairs of the restaurant, and she's seen often looking out of the upstairs windows. And customers have heard her footsteps walking above them while they're eating downstairs. And it's believed that she had lived in the house at one time and committed suicide after being betrayed by her lover. And she may have been... rumor has it that she actually created an embroidery sampler before her death that said, "Remember me."
On her deathbed, I like her style.
Yeah.
"Remember me." And then she cross-stitched some ellipses.
Yeah.
Right. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at HeyYouKnowIt.com. Thanks. Buffalo, is, the ultimate meat.
Is that the name of your new band?
The ultimate meat? Yes. We're a quartet. Yeah. Barbershop. We're ultimate meat. What we do is we do Prince covers, barbershop style. Coming to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All Prince covers.
All proceeds go to the moon. Anti-colonial moon.
Okay.
Fund. For leaving the moon. The hell alone.
That's right. Stay off the moon.
Stay off the moon, the ultimate meat. All right, so what else do you have for...